Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
Our house in the middle of our street.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont with hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West. Each week, a new topic specific to building or renovating in the Green Mountains and your phone calls. Our program brought to you by RK Miles, a third-generation family-owned business, proud to be your local building materials supplier. Find a location near you at rkmiles.com. Poly Construction, for over 30 years, known for anything construction, big or small jobs, one call does it all. POLLIconstruction.com. Ken Libby of the Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, your trusted advisor at 802-793-2002. Curtis Lumber, with two locations in Vermont, Williston and Burlington. Request a quote for your next project online at curtislumber.com. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. By Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpainting.com. By Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems, for all things basementy, northernnefoundations.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. And now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Hello, everybody out there. This is Jim Bradley.
And Chris West.
It's been a little while. Time does fly, though. It's been about 6 months. And, hey, we're not for the birds, but time does fly. Hope everyone's enjoying their weekend and the wonderful color we've been having. We're hearing stories that Route 100 is really backed up right now. But other than that, it's been beautiful out there, certainly.
Absolutely. And we're getting to that time of year where people are starting to get temperatures in the evenings when they're turning their heating systems on and closing the windows.
Starting the fireplace, all those type of things. I haven't yet, thankfully.
So first of all, we want to welcome everybody back. Thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited to be back on the air and be able to take your phone calls and hear about your building science questions, your do-it-yourself projects, your new build construction, your renovations, any questions that you might have. Give us a call. The number here is 802-244-1777 and call in and ask us your questions.
You know, Chris, last year, one thing that really amazed me about the show that I didn't expect, I mean, granted, when we go out and do an energy audit or a home performance assessment or meet with a client about a new build or renovation, you certainly have a captive audience then, and you get to express, you know, what should be done, how it should be done right, and it's an educational opportunity. But we thought this venue could be really helpful, but we didn't realize the amount of interest that would come forth from this. And, you know, so many calls that came in or emails that came into the website were asking us to come out and actually perform a site visit at their home. And that type of interest was great because we helped a lot of people in that regard avoid some issues, not purchase certain things that they shouldn't as far as a home is concerned because there was such a failure going on. But a lot of things, it was just getting to connect with you, our listeners, face to face and be able to help you through some of this. Now, some of those people we weren't able to get to, and we're sorry for that, but there's only so many hours in the day and days in the week. But, you know, certainly continue to call in, ask your questions, email us at our website. Chris has that information for the website. Where would they be emailing, Chris?
That's housecallsvt@gmail.com. That's our email, and you can send us a question there or pictures or follow-ups, and we'll get back to you on those.
And we'll do our best to do so, and we've had some great dialogue with you, our listeners, in doing so. Definitely we encourage you to write, send your questions in or call in right now, and we'll be more than happy to take those. And, Chris, you know, one thing that we were going to get to last year that time got away from us was the indoor air quality test. and we definitely are going – we have names still of people. We've got it out to a few people, but not as many as we wanted to, but to capture data and to find out what's going on in their homes.
Right. So one of the projects we had last year that we were hoping to roll out but we're having some technical problems with was an indoor air quality survey, which is where you as the listener would let us know you're interested. We would get you an indoor air quality monitor. You'd leave it in various rooms of the house with door open, door closed, like the bedroom is a good one. Then we'd get that device back and we'd be able to download the information and give you an assessment of how the indoor air quality of your house is during various times. And we were very excited about the technology we're using, but we also found that there were some limitations. We thought we'd be able to get remote information, and we weren't. So we're still working on that. We will be sending emails out to everyone who signed up for that project last year and see if you're still interested. And if you are, then we'll start getting those units out and getting some interesting data.
Certainly. And, you know, so much has been happening this last year and a half that has put a lot of importance. You know, there always has been importance on getting it right when you're doing your own home improvement projects or building new or making weatherization changes to make your home more efficient, more comfortable. I mean, that's always been important. But in this day when things are kind of topsy-turvy and upside down and twisted backwards, you've got to make sure that you're making the most informed choices possible as far as timing, types of products you're going to use, how you're going to implement some of these changes. And that's why we want to help you prevent bad things from happening. We don't want to go to the crash site once the train goes off the cliff and then figure out what happened. What we want to be able to do is help you avoid ever going off the cliff in the first place. Go ahead, Chris.
So in the last year, while we were not on the air, Jim and I spent time working on our YouTube channel.
Yep.
All of the episodes from last year's show have been turned into YouTube videos with additional graphics and additional information. So if you're interested in going back, we have a series of topics, indoor air quality, ventilation, good wall assemblies, air sealing and air tightness, attics, basements, blah, blah, blah. We've got a whole slew of different topics. And sometimes that those topics will cover what your questions are. One of the things we added was we started getting permission from people we're doing energy audits on to do videos of the energy audits. And we've been turning those into 15 to 20 minute shorts, usually four per audit. You know, the walk up, the walk around, the discussion with the client about the interior, an interior inspection, the blower door test, checking the basement, checking the attic, and then the final talk with the client about what our recommendations are. So if you're interested in that, those are on playlists in our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/c/housecallsvermont, and you can check all that information out. And we're going to be doing more energy audits this fall, and we will be doing the same thing. We'll be making videos of them and uploading them. So if you're interested in what happens during an audit, you can eavesdrop on our audits.
And one of those things, Chris and I were talking about this off air before the show started, you know, could somebody say, oh, I've already seen an audit video, why is that important to me? Because if you're thinking about making changes or you're having issues with your home, I mean, there are so many different housing types, from the old farmhouse with a rubble foundation or a ranch or a cape or a colonial or something like that, that have typical problems. You know, we can listen to a customer on the phone when they're first calling us, and we'll ask them certain questions that we know will basically explain, are they having some of those same issues? And so if you watch one of those videos about the audit and you have a similar house type, that's going to help you pinpoint some things and say, hey, should I really get something, you know, professional in here to help me out with this, or could I do some of this work myself, and where should I be looking? But we definitely recommend that you have a home performance assessment or an energy audit, no matter what stage of a project you're in, unless it's a new build, of course. But certainly if you're going to be doing renovations or you're going to be making these renovation changes or weatherization changes, these home performance assessments or energy audits are hugely important. And to be able to find somebody who can do that work for you and perform that assessment, if you go to Efficiency Vermont's website and go to find a contractor, it'll help pinpoint the contractors in your area that you can call and choose from and have a dialogue with, so that you can get them out there taking a look at your house before you make some of these significant changes. You know, Chris and I have seen so many things where a customer, very independent, you know, spirit in Vermont, want to do things on their own, and that's great. I really respect that initiative. But the DIY, we don't want that to stand for destroy it yourself. We want it to be do it yourself, but do it yourself correctly. So that's really important.
Yeah. Other things that have been going on in our lives. Last year in February, we were called by someone who heard about us on the radio to come and take a look at their tiny house where mushrooms were growing out of the floor. I don't know if you guys remember this. We went on about it quite extensively at the time. In the time between then and now, the clients, after getting a complete assessment of the condition of that tiny house, and our explanations for why mushrooms are growing out of the floor and other issues were happening with the house, the couple decided to sell the tiny house. It sat on the market for a number of months. Nobody picked it up. And then Jim and I decided, you know what? We're going to buy this tiny house. We're going to do the retrofit that we recommended in our report, and we're going to make videos about it. So if you're interested in what not to do when you're making a tiny house in order for it to survive well in our climate, you can check out those tiny house videos as we're doing them. They're not up yet, but we will be doing updates, and we'll be talking about it here on the show as well, what's going on. And the most important thing about that is that the builder, who was in Connecticut, built the tiny house with the understanding that it would be in Burlington, Vermont. That's where it would be living, and built it not following the building signs. And not only not following the building signs for Burlington, Vermont, but not even following the basic building science for Connecticut. So,
exactly. What was the heat pump? The heat pump itself was only rated down to 35 degrees.
Yeah, it was most heat pumps that we use in Vermont are something they call hyperheat, which are heat pumps that can go down and still operate at minus 18. Hello, we live in Vermont. If you're in Connecticut, you still have to have a heat pump that's going to work down to 5. And this heat pump that they had was really only going down to like 30 degrees and then shutting off. And it was the main heat for this house. So
exactly.
There are a lot of things wrong with that. And we'll be cataloging those not only in spots here on the show, but also in the videos.
And the reason why Chris and I were really compelled to go after this and to purchase this is because we've – you know, it's easy to point out what's wrong. What's difficult is to make it right. And so we wanted others to learn from this opportunity and build something that's going to be highly functional, high performance, and will exist well and perform well in our climate and be indoor air quality safe at the same time. And then, you know, this is important not just for tiny houses, but some people in this area will travel in RVs and live in RVs.
They have wheels on them, people.
I know. They'll do that. And also with modular homes. And so you might be buying a modular home from a different area in the nation that doesn't respect our climate. And the thing is, with building science is not going to respect our best intentions and our shortcuts.
It's or gonna, our beliefs about how something should work.
Yes, so exactly. It's going to do what it's going
it's
to do, right?
It's going to do it.
So that's why you have to give it proper attention and address these things, or you will be addressing them in about 5 or 10 years or less to replace all those materials that just molded or rotted away.
Yep.
And Chris, you know, some of the things that have been happening that made things really challenging during this past year, that in May – lumber prices got up to $1,711 per thousand board feet. And that's just the quantity that they use to price everything, you know, when it comes to lumber and sheet goods as well, is in the thousand board feet. And so it had gotten up to $1,711, where a year prior to that, it was right around the $300 mark.
I think it was $350 at the beginning of the pandemic. Yeah.
Yes. And so everyone was really challenged, like, what are we going to do? And then materials were in really short supply, which caused the price to go up even more. But then we suspected that in the fall, things were going to ease a bit. And they have. They got down to, I believe it was
$475 a thousand board feet. Yeah.
Yep. But then checking things this morning, their prices are back on the rise and they're going up to $708 a board feet. And that's not usually expected because we are going into the fall of the year where a lot of building projects begin in our region, certainly begin to wane. And so there's less demand on the supply chain. And so that's a time for mills and such to catch up and, you know, increase their inventories. But there's a huge factor with, once again, product availability, the ability to truck the product to its location, to the mill to get processed, and also back
from
to
the mill.
Yeah, from the mill. And then, you know, with the whole workforce issue, when having enough in the labor force to actually fill the jobs, you know, and we just see there's a shortage of employees. Somebody disappeared a lot of people because everybody is saying that there is such a lack of workers available for us. But at the same time, the demand has not waned. We're seeing some people backing off from wanting to move forward with some projects. But on the whole, people are still running ahead. Let's build that new home. Let's do that addition. Let's make these changes. And that just continues to put pressure on the supply chain.
I have a person that I know who moved here from out of state. And they were looking for a house in the Jericho area. And originally they were looking at, we're looking at maybe $300,000-$400,000 for a, 12 to 1,500 square foot house. They just paid over $600,000 for a house that's about 1,800 square feet. A perfectly nice house, but that is way out of line with what the prices were for that product just before the pandemic started. And are those prices ever going to normalize and go back down? If they go back down, these people are underwater. If they don't, then all of the prices for similar houses go up and make it unaffordable for moderate income Vermonters to stay here and to have the ability to get into house ownership.
And so, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, OSB, oriented strand board sheathing, which you put –
vertical mulch.
A lot of people use
it
underneath their siding to go against the framing as exterior sheathing. That went from right around the $9 to $10 a sheet before the pandemic. And back in May, it was up to in the summer, $65 and change.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's just that increase. How do you explain that? But
highway robbery?
Well, and then the sigh of relief is it's backed off to a little under $30, which is still triple the cost of what it used to be.
Yep.
And so will it come all the way back down? I don't foresee that happening. But that's why you have to be really smart when choosing your project and how that's going to be built and who you're going to use to build that if you're not doing it yourself.
And what products you're going to be choosing to do that with. Yeah.
And stick with those choices because, see, here's the thing. It's the acquisition. You know, right now when we're building new homes or structures, we're actually choosing to build or purchase the whole package for lumber. I work for Hayward Design Build out of South Hero, and a lot of the things that we're building right now, we'll ship the entire package. Instead of bringing it in phases, we're bringing the whole thing on site, make sure it's there so the price is locked in and we know the products are going to be there. Right now, we're experiencing shortages. I just heard yesterday that a certain kitchen cabinet line, it's not a specialized, it's just a normal kitchen cabinet line, is now 22 weeks out as far as a lead time to acquire that, and where it had been 3 to 4 weeks to obtain that. We have electrical items where some electricians I've spoken with, some of the basic items that they need are 83 weeks out. That's
wait a second, 52 weeks in a year. That's a more than a year and a half.
And then we have one customer that back in November thought we were being prudent, went ahead and ordered an induction range for their new build, and they had that was back in November. It kept being delayed throughout the course of this year. It was supposed to come in this last week on October 5th, but that we got the update. It's now forecasted to February 1st of 2022, well over a year just to get a simple rain that's not specialized. And so these stresses are out there. So basically, when you're doing your project, make sure you're going to be smart about this. You're going to be nimble, and you're going to make sure you're defining what you want. You know what your choices are. You acquire those materials, because trying to do effective project management in these days is really tough, because all those known variables that you can rely upon and sequencing that's so important, you've got to kind of throw that out the door and just say, okay, which way is the wind blowing and how are we going to adapt?
I had a very odd situation with that house I'm renovating over on Old Stage Road in Essex. It's an old farmhouse. I've talked about it before on the show. It's got a brick farmhouse from the 1830s with a summer kitchen, a wood frame summer kitchen attached to it. And I bought some 2x4s before the pandemic hit, and I haven't finished using them, fortunately, but I was thinking, if I bought all that stuff before the pandemic and people are paying four times and I can wait to run this project, why don't I just turn around and sell these, single pieces of 2x4 for three times what I bought it for? But I decided I'd rather have them on site.
Oh, certainly. And some of the things that we're hearing, and we're not trying to be doom and gloom about this, we just want you to be aware so you can go ahead and get ahead of the game if at all possible, is that in 2022, the elements are in place already that there's going to be probably make the past difficulties we have pale in comparison to what's coming as far as some of the delays.
That's not doom and gloom?
No. Well, I'm not trying to be. That's what I'm just saying. If you're listening to us, you're going to get a little bit ahead of everybody else to say, let's be smart about this. Because, you know, a lot of times in construction projects, people will make changes at the last minute as the project's moving forward. And that was easy. Hey, let's return that because we want a stainless steel colored appliance instead of a black or a white. Now you do that, you're not guaranteed you're going to be getting a replacement in that color that you wanted. So make sure those selections are made effectively and you stay with them in the beginning.
And we know we've seen a lot of clients make changes of color schemes. Were you the one who was telling me that the story about the bathroom with the tiles? There was I was talking to a builder, I thought it was you, who said that this is the third time that the client had changed the tiles and that they'd actually deconstructed the bathroom three times. So if you're a client and you don't want to be known as that client, the problem client that people are just gritting their teeth until the project is done, try not to be so capricious with your choices, especially since these changes are going to maybe push the finish of the project out by weeks, if not months at this point, to get new color schemes and things in.
You know, one thing that Chris and I were talking about as well is, you know, for new listeners that are out there, is to give them a better understanding of why we do what we do. You know, Chris and I have worked together for about 10 years now. We both have been in the industry, myself for about 30 years, Chris, I think about 20 at this point in time, and various backgrounds and everything else. And we come from different sides of the spectrum on some issues. We're right in line in others. But this is from no matter which side we approach this in the building industry, we are in lockstep of saying this is why we do what we do, is because of how important it is. You know, Chris, for yourself, what are the main things that you would say are your passions and what you are trying to help occur?
So learning about building science, I think I remember when Jim was taking his Passive House Builder course, when he called me almost in tears saying he ruined houses before. It's all about knowledge, right?
Yep.
In the 1960s and before, we were building houses and it didn't matter how leaky they were. It didn't matter what the difference in products were because oil was really inexpensive and natural gas was inexpensive and we could just burn our way out of a poorly built house. Well, we're not there anymore. I saw some projections the other day that propane is going up, up, up. We're going to be seeing some of the highest propane prices that we've seen in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, and that's going to start putting people in the financial straits where they're going to have to start making decisions between heating their house and eating.
Heating or eating.
Right.
Those are really tough choices.
And that's why I'm interested in this. I really think that the information that we get to people when they finally sit down and they hear it, they're kind of like, why don't I know this already? Why am I out there buying the most expensive thing I'm ever going to buy? For most people, although not all, buying a house is the biggest investment they'll ever make in their life. But they do it very cavalierly and they do it without learning about it. And so what we want to do is for the owner, but also for the builder who has not necessarily felt it necessary to keep up on the latest information on building science and air tightness. And for the architects out there who are maybe not learning about this, we need to come together and make sure that this information is available to people and that they can get it in a way that they can digest it and use it in making their decisions about their houses. Decisions about, we had a caller last year who called in talking about he knows he has to ventilate a crawl space. And we're like, okay, well, that is the advice from 1983.
Yeah.
However, we know better now. And that is not just with the crawl space. That's not just with the basement. That's in every conceivable area of the house. Houses are systems. If you're going to change something in one part of the house, you're going to see changes in another part of the house. And part of what we want to do is to be able to step in and make sure that the the client has a bit of information so they can make informed decisions in the face of a contractor who may not know those things or give you the right advice.
In fact, I was talking to a client last week, and it was about a new build over in Burlington. And when we were discussing it with him, he already had a builder lined up that kind of went a different direction. Now, the builder does quality work with respect to how it looks and how things are put together. You know, he knows which end of the hammer to use really effectively. But on the other side, the high-performance side and the near-passive house standard, he said this, "I'll give it a try." That's not what you want to hear from your builder who's going to be trying to make things more efficient, because that means that he's going to get frustrated in the process. Because when I took my training, they said, okay, the first two you build like this, the first two houses, you're going to say, why the heck am I doing this? And then after you do that, you're going to develop the systems, the processes, become more efficient at what you do. It's going to become commonplace, and you're going to say, why haven't I been doing this all along?
All along.
Because common, regular construction that's out there is prone to failure the way that it's been done. Some builders will take a step back and say, you know what, I'm not going to use that house wrap or do it this way or whatever. I'm going to go back to just tar paper. Well, that's unfortunate, because though they may have experienced problems with some of those products and then they're going to default to what used to work, what doesn't work anymore is that the building materials aren't made the same way. They're going to be new growth lumber, which is more susceptible to moisture and rot and everything else, and then they're going to use engineered product like the vertical mulch or the OSB. And if you use the same old methods with new types of materials, you're not going to get the results that you're expecting, and so that's going to be a real problem. And with that, I would say, Chris, what is your biggest takeaway from some of the clients that, I mean, it's vast and varied, sure, but it's almost without default. It's you know, we've had some people walk off and begin drinking at 10 a.m. We've had others walk off, and then the wife says, don't worry, I signed the checks. Because it just became overwhelming once we were doing these assessments in their homes because of the problems that we did find. But what overall would you think is a takeaway from when we're doing one of these home performance assessments?
So I think the takeaway is that people the majority of people really do want to know what's going on inside their house. They really do want to understand why they're either uncomfortable or they're getting huge heating bills or their health is changing when the heating season starts. So what we've found is engaged clients who just don't know anything about it yet. They are, I know nothing about racing cars. If I were to walk into a place and start talking about racing cars, the people around me hopefully would step in and say, well, you obviously are a newbie and don't know what you're talking about. That's the same thing with an owner of a house. Most people are not builders. Most people don't have a building science background. And what we end up doing, and one of the reasons we started this show, is that at the end of every energy audit, we were basically giving advice to the people on how to move forward. And they were eating it up. They were really interested in getting this information. What do you think, Jim? What's your takeaway?
Well, you know, I think that it never fails to resonate appropriately, you know, and it, sometimes you'll get some pushback from some homeowners. One called us last year and said, okay, what's my problem? And we told him what the problem was, how to fix it. And he says, yeah, I'm just going to continue to do it the way I did it before and repeat the issue. So you'll get some of that, or you'll get builders who say, I've done this for 20 to 30 years, and this is the same way I'm going to do it going forward.
Or it's too expensive to change.
Yes, and then they're going to continue to create the same problems. Yeah. And so for me, be able to educate the homeowners, because see, a lot of the work that's being done with the nuts and the bolts behind the scenes, they're never really going to appreciate until there's a failure.
Yeah.
You know, granted, they'll be comfortable in their home. The indoor air quality is going to be better. But to really put their finger on it, it's usually when something catastrophic happens and they have to replace something, and then we go in there and say, this is how you could have prevented it. Then they're keenly aware. So making sure they're educated, and then when they go to their friend's house, that they become educated, you know, and they understand the process. So they know the right questions to answer, or to ask, I should say, not answer. So they get the correct answers from somebody who's going to be doing the work. Because you can go to a local supply store, which we have great ones here, and there are a lot of great people that work in there and have a lot of knowledge. But sometimes you'll get the person just off the street that took the job. They don't know much, and they say, we'll try this because other people buy it. Well, how does it work? I don't know, but just try it. It's less expensive. Those are not the way that we, that's not the way we want you making choices when you're making these improvements to your home. You want to be informed, and then if you're not going to do the work yourself, you're going to be able to ask the carpenter or the contractor that's doing the work the right questions. And I think that's really important. You know, for me, Chris, the takeaway from all this is it comes down to simple stewardship. You know, we have this earth. And there's a finite amount of resources on this earth, and we need to be respectful of that, and we need to make sure if we're going to do something, let's do it once and not have to – you know, it's all about resource preservation. You know, if you're going to spend money and side your house and then – or build your house, and in 10 years that siding's rotted away, but then you're going to go back and put it, the same siding right back on there, all that labor and effort to create the siding and then get it to site, tear the old off, put the new on – and then thinking that you're going to get different results in another 10 years, you can get the same results and maybe even faster. And so what we want to be able to do is make sure that our resources are being used effectively. Your pocketbook is not going to be stretched in negative ways. That when you make this investment, it's going to yield you positive results, not negative financial situations. And that's what's for me is so important. And almost without exception, sharing this information with builders alike and also clients, they've absorbed the information, you know, and they say, okay, that's why we've had this mistake, or that's why we've had this recurring problem, and now we know how to fix it and do it appropriately.
And speaking of local lumber yards, for the first time this season, Jim and I will be doing remote broadcasts. And the first of our remote broadcasts is scheduled for October 30th. That's yep. Saturday, October 30th from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. at Sticks and Stuff in St. Albans.
Wonderful.
So put it on your calendar. If you live in the area and want to come meet us in person, come bring your building science question. We'll be happy to take photos with the kiddies if that's the famous Chris West and Jim Bradley from House Calls Vermont showing up October 30th from 12:30 to 1:30 at Sticks and Stuff in St. Albans.
Were we wearing costumes to that one? I can't remember.
I'm still working on my costume. I was thinking of Louis the 18th with the wig and the high heels.
Okay. You'll be able to figure out where Chris is coming from.
And which one of us is Chris, that's for sure. So we're coming up we're not quite there, but we're coming up to the break for the second break. Right now, 802-244-1777 to give us a call and ask us about your building science question. Are you cold in your house at night now? Are you noticing condensation? I was playing tennis the other day with a colleague of mine, a tennis fellow of mine. He said, I just got a quote for getting a ventilation system put into my house because we're worried about the indoor air quality. And I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, we have condensation on the windows. And I was like, so what are they suggesting they do? And he said, they're suggesting that we add a fresh air supply right into the forced hot air system. And that's a red flag for me. I mean, you can just from a ventilation and heating point of view, you can put fresh air into your forced hot air system. However, if the system's not been well designed to work together, you can be putting a lot of money into a system not going to get what you want. Also, if you have condensation on your windows, it may not be ventilation. Your indoor air quality might be fine. It may just be that the builder didn't choose a good enough R value window when they put it in, and you're getting condensation. So that type of conversation that I have on you know, just walking down the street with people I run into gets me to the point that we need to keep on teaching people about building science, and we need to keep on informing people that there are places to get a second opinion about company giving you recommendation. A $3,000 system may not be exactly what they need. And I'm going to be taking a look at this for him. And that's what I'm doing this for. I'm doing it to try to stop people from making mistakes and putting money where it won't help and, you know, not money where it should help.
Certainly. Well, you know, with that, if you're going to be making these changes and though Efficiency Vermont is, you know, we're partners with Efficiency Vermont. We do home performance assessments, and on my new builds that I do, you know, we usually do a high performance build, and so they're part of the program.
And we will be having our famous Steve Spatz back on the air starting soon.
In the Efficiency Vermont corner.
That's right.
don't put Steve in a corner. Or that was Baby. Don't put Baby in a corner. But, you know, so with that, that's a great resource to go on their EEN list of contractors, and that's the Efficiency Excellence Network list of contractors, be able to find somebody who can come look at your house, who's been trained in the very things we're speaking about.
And vetted by Efficiency Vermont.
Exactly. Yeah. They're insured. Oh, my gosh. They don't have criminal records. You know, several things like that that are positive.
We're not promising they don't have criminal records. We're just
– But with that, you want to make sure you're finding the contractor who is knowledgeable in this and doesn't just – swing the hammer well, which is important, but also knows how to build the house as a system or renovate it as a system. So you do that, but it also allows you, if you have a home performance assessment performed, the pre and the post, so to make sure how leaky was it in the beginning, what were the changes that were prescribed, and then what the improvements were and how much better the house was afterwards, you're able to tap into funding rebate monies of anywhere between a maximum of $1,000 to $3,000, depending on your income levels, and up to 50% of the project cost. So that's money that's there, that's available to help you, you know, in the process of getting the work performed.
And almost every project we've ever worked on, if you were to look at $1,000 as 50%, I'm sure that would fall under that threshold.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. Chris, you know, now that things are changing, you know, the fall colors will be here for a while, but then the cold temperatures are right behind them. And so people are starting to close up their house more. And they're going to notice some changes when they do that, where the windows have been open, the doors have been open. Now they're going to be closing things up. Indoor air quality becomes really important. What do you think about that?
So when – one of the things that Jim and I regularly ask clients when we're in doing an audit is, do you have any – noticeable changes in the health of the people living in the house after the heating season starts, after we've closed the windows at night, after we're closing the windows in the day. What happens when we're closing the windows? Well, let's think about the house as a system again. Right now, during the spring, during the summer, when it was warm enough, even during the day now, we open our windows, and that allows for great indoor air quality, because indoor air quality is then outdoor air quality. But the
exactly.
second we close our windows at night and close the door to our bedroom, you may have indoor air quality issues. So one of the things that we recommend to do is to consider starting a journal, just a piece of paper or a book or even a computer file like a spreadsheet or something, where you start keeping track of who's getting sick, what they're getting sick with. Are people having comfort issues? Where are those comfort issues?
Sleeping issues.
Right. Are you getting a good night's sleep? Are you noticing that your sleep is not as good, or that you're groggy when you get up in the morning? Those are indications that the indoor air quality of the house may not be as good as outdoor air, and may be a good way to decide whether or not you should do some indoor air quality testing.
And so, you know, once again, we're always going to refer to look at the house as a system, you know, because every piece and part and system inside that, heating systems, ventilation systems, the framing materials, the rodents that live in there, the occupants of the house that are either human or pet, you know, that type of thing, all those affect that indoor air quality. And once you start to shut things up, you are increasing the concentration levels of carbon dioxide, of particulates from cooking, particulates from a heating system, you know, what that might be.
That warm bread smell that you get
True.
When you turn on your forest hot air system for the first time, that's Yep. actually the smell of burning dust.
Yummy.
Yay. Not Yeah. good. It's part of what's called PM 2.5, which is microfine particulates. So, yeah, when the question is, when the windows are open, that air is coming from outside. When the windows are closed, that air may be coming from outside if you don't have a balanced ventilation system, but it's coming through all kinds of things to get there.
Yeah, you look at your wall systems, your ag systems. So if you've got porous walls, even coming through your electrical outlets, or possibly, you know, light fixtures in your attic, or from the basement, the wet, damp, basement.
If your basement is wet and dirty.
Yeah, if you have that. And so that what happens is you're turning a dryer on. The newer dryers push out about 300 cubic feet of air per minute. When that air gets pushed out, it's the natural physics principle of it's going to re-equalize that pressure inside by bringing air in through the easiest path. And that's usually going to be through an area you don't want it to coming through. So it could be coming across the mouse droppings, the rat droppings, or whatever. It could be coming across a wall cavity that has mold in it, or a basement, the same thing.
Or from your garage full of volatile organic compounds.
Big consideration there. And you could be bringing in carbon monoxide, which yep. may not kill you immediately, but it certainly that can affect your health in the long term. And so all these stresses on the body really are going to make you less comfortable when things are all closed up. And so getting a simple monitor that can check that, you know, as Chris said, first start with a journal. If you're noticing changes, if you're noticing that, hey, it's not as comfortable in here, or I feel a bit more agitated,
or everybody's got a cough. Since we did that, I remember you talking about your
house.
Oh,
my sons. Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. It was the point where I lived in a Cape, and somebody else had built this part of it. And my sons, when they were much younger, they seasonally would start to have respiratory issues. And finally, I understood more about building science, popped my head up in the attic, and I saw black, you know, not the black mold, but black colored mold throughout the attic. And what was happening, since the attic was leaky, warm, moist air was escaping and condensing and then helping support the mold issue inside. But that's those same particles were coming back inside, were part of their airstream, and that's why it was causing my boys to have some issues. So that's why it's important. I mean, I don't know how many times when we have found mold in a house, you ask people in the home, does anyone suffer from headaches? Does anyone have asthma issues or any other kind of respiratory issues? And the hands start going up. Yep, right here. And so that's the smoking gun. And so,
and mostly what we're getting is anecdotal evidence. People say, yeah, I remember that, maybe that. But if you're keeping a journal and you can see from your entries that, say, the month of October to November – that you've got a bunch of entries, you can say, wait a second, this is concerning me. Now I want to test. Let me get in touch with Jim and Chris and get an indoor air quality monitor test set up and find out what the indoor air quality is. We don't want to recommend changing your ventilation scheme unless we have some data. And part of that data is the journal, and maybe a follow-up data information would be the indoor air quality testing.
And one of the clients we did this with last year, they had some indoor air quality issues, condensation on the windows, things like that. And they had some improvements done to the house, but it still – things weren't right. Yeah. And so they wanted us to come out there. We did, and it turned into a simple review because there were carpenter ants in the foam in the attic. But then it turned into a big thing on indoor air quality. And then we just started listening to the customer, the client, and they started expressing things about the occupants in the homes where they were having some of these issues, including their adult son who had asthma. You know, you're looking at this. You're not trying to say, oh, that's the aha moment and I know this is the cause. But it certainly, at the very least, puts certain stresses on their physical makeup. And so with that, we did allow them to use the indoor air quality monitor, and they found that the parts per million in his room alone –
4,000 parts per million overnight, which 900 to 1,200 is the safe level. So he was four times above what people consider to be safe level. Now, is that permanent damage? No. Carbon dioxide, as soon as you get more carbon dioxide, your cognition comes back.
More oxygen.
Lower carbon dioxide, I mean. But you do not want to be living in a room that is regularly 4,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide.
But where the carpenter ants were coming in, there was also condensation issues and some moisture issues that were right above his room.
Yep.
So we went down in his living space, made a slight hole in the wall to fit a borescope camera through, and identified that there was mold in the walls also. And so this, you know, it's a series of events. He's closing up his room. The CO2 levels are going up. The mold spores are more concentrated, and he already had asthma. So I think that he definitely, once these changes are made and they're going with the ventilation system and improving some of these issues, that he's going to experience a great bit of relief just because these environmental issues were corrected.
But more, very importantly in that whole story is the step plan, right?
Yes.
First, you know, identify that there's a problem. That's what we're recommending setting up a journal for. Second of all, ask for help once the journal indicates that there is an obvious or present problem. Now, if you already have data saying that I'm concerned about this because I've seen in the past, you don't need to start a journal. You can just, you know, get the indoor air quality monitoring done. And if that shows that there are issues, then you know, designing and installing a ventilation regimen that will make that better is recommended.
Yeah, and you know, with that, don't be misled by thinking that, let's say you have a hot air furnace and air's moving. Well, that's ventilation. That's not what we're talking about.
You got to know that a forced hot air system does not bring any air from the outside. This is recirculation of air inside the house.
Usually through ductwork, that is.
Dusty. Now, that brings us to our last topic of the day. So keep that journal. And if you have questions, please send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com. If you have a question, 802-244-1777. But the last topic of the day is heating season, right? Now, I live in a super insulated house. I don't have to put on my heating until we get below 40 degrees. But that's not true with a lot of houses. A lot of houses, when you hit 50, your indoor temperature is cold enough that you want to turn your heating system on. Okay, well, the first time you turn a heating system on, it should actually be considered something to maintain.
Yes.
We want to get through the whole winter without having problems. And starting with that forced hot air system, you're going to have filters that need to be replaced. And those filters are downstairs on the actual units, usually on the return side. And it's a large, usually 2 feet by 3 foot filter. And they have these filters at your local hardware stores. You just need to take out the old filter, get the number so you get the right size.
I replaced that 4 or 5 years ago.
I'm sure you did. And make sure you put it in the right direction. There's
yes.
a flow direction, and you don't want to be collecting the dust and then blowing it into the supply. So that's the first thing. And if you don't know how to do that, call your local HVAC contractor to come out and give you a hand with that. On the similar note is that any fuel-burning hotter furnace or boiler needs to be serviced. And the service regularity, if it's oil, it's every year. We want you to have a tech come in and do a cleaning every year. Oil is dirtier than natural gas. It just burns dirtier.
And when they're doing that test, make sure they're using a combustion analyzer. There was one house that we checked that was 10 years old. And when we got there, there had been 15 different visits over that 10-year period by HVAC individuals. Apparently, though, they never used a combustion analyzer because when we got out there and used ours, it showed 10,000 parts per million plus of carbon monoxide being pushed out. You should not have that. It should be well under 50 in most situations. And so that was a danger because if there was ever a cracked pipe inside, then that would have been catastrophic to the occupants.
Or a situation where the chimney didn't draft right and you got backdrafting, that could be catastrophic.
And in this one, you think, okay, well, the system just went bad. The other people, I'm sure, checked it fine. Well, here's the departure from that thinking is the fact that when we contacted the manufacturer, we found out that the wrong burners were put in from the date of manufacture, which was causing the higher CO carbon monoxide output. So this was a problem day one that was never picked up until the home performance assessment was done.
And those things can be as simple as the fact that the HVAC contractor that installed it installed one that had a natural gas
happens all the time.
Nozzle instead of the propane nozzle.
That it needed.
And that difference, although it's not a very big difference, can cause a huge difference in that. So if you are burning natural gas, every 2 years get your every 2 years get your system cleaned and checked. If you have a wood stove,
oh gosh,
get your chimney cleaned. I don't care if you're burning only hardwood, get it cleaned. Once a year, the buildup of creosote can cause a chimney fire, and chimney fires can burn your whole house down. So get that checked. So that's forced hot air, boiler, regular wood stove.
But then we have what people know as cold climate heat pumps or mini split systems. Some people, they're now ducted. Some have like a cassette or a register that sit on the floor. But predominantly, you're going to see what they're called wall warts, wall mounted systems that they have a unit inside and then they have the condenser outside. And that is a really efficient source of heating and cooling both. But at the same time, they get ignored. And so those.
Oh gosh, we were in Mooresville doing that house, and we said to the client, "So how often do you clean the filters?" And they said,
"Filter." So you know, you want to get that unit serviced at least once every 3 years for the actual unit, the outdoor unit, but for the filters, probably once a month, especially when you get the if you're closing up your house and you've got a lot more dust in there at that time, and you're not getting outdoor air coming in, you're going to have a higher concentration of dust, and you're going to want to clean those more often. So yeah, really, every month usually is a good suggestion.
Yep. So the indoor wall-wart unit, it's a recirculation unit. It's pulling air in from the room, putting it over what's called a fan coil, and transferring the heat or the cooling, depending on whether you're heating or cooling, into that air. All of these fan coils have these long fins, which allow for more surface area for better transfer of heat from the unit to the air. Those start getting clogged up with dust. Even if you have the filters in place and you're cleaning them regularly, over 2 or 3 years, those get full of dust. So the outside unit should get cleaned every 3 years, and the indoor unit should get cleaned out every 3 years. But every month, you should be pulling those filters, washing them in the sink, drying them out, and putting them back in, just to reduce the amount of time between needing to get those deep cleans.
And with that, just think of it this way. You know, all of us have been in this situation where masks have become very prevalent, and when you put those on, it usually is a little more challenging to breathe. Well, think of your heating system and your filters. That's like that mask. And if it gets plugged up and blocked, it can't breathe as well. It can't perform as well. It's going to be less efficient. It's going to put more stress on the unit, which means it's not going to last as long, or it's going to break down more often. Yeah. So that's why it's so important to maintain this, because we're getting so many more pieces of equipment inside of our homes. But some of these people, like the traditional oil furnace, they'll think about, yes, changing that filter most times. But some of these other, you know, like the heat pumps or a mechanical ventilation system, not a bath fan, but one that's a balanced ventilation system, those have filters that need to be maintained as well. But there was one, I found the unit, it had not been serviced in 8 years, and the amount of debris that was inside there was no way it could operate effectively. And yet you clean that out and you get that performance and you get it to do what it's designed to do.
And that's a very good point on those balanced ventilation systems, is we put these in these homes, and you should be leaving one of these homes with a how to use this house manual.
Exactly.
And part of that manual should say, change your filters as recommended by the manufacturer on these balanced ventilation systems, usually within the 2 to 6 months range. And every 5 years, have all of the ducting cleaned by a professional duct cleaning system, you know, service. Because even if you have a filter in place, mm-hmm. you're still going to be getting buildup, especially in and around the kitchen exhaust, where you're going to have greasy air going in there. And we just need to make sure that we're not creating a health problem when we're trying to solve a health problem, right?
Exactly.
So maintain these systems. That's really important. We're just getting to the very end of the show.
And one thing that's going to be neat about this going forward in this season is that definitely we're going to have different opportunities. We're going to take all your calls, your emails, and everything else and answer those as effectively as possible. But by doing these remote type of shows of St. Albans, once again, Sticks and Stuff on October 30th from 12:30 to 1:30, we're going to be doing that. And there's other dynamics that are going to be coming into play here with some of the like Steve Spatz with Efficiency Vermont, but other guests that will come in. So we definitely encourage you to be a part of the show. Keep listening. Send your questions in. Give us a call with those questions as well, and make this a really informative yet interactive experience during this next season.
And so just for the very tail end of the show, our YouTube channel is youtube.com/C/housecallsvermont. We have the eavesdropping, the audio eavesdropping. I've got updates on the work I've been doing on the renovation of that old farmhouse in Essex. We've got great interviews with industry leaders on various topics. There's an interview actually with John Rockwell from Zender, which I'm still editing. We'll have up there very soon. So check that out. Our email is housecallsvt@gmail.com. Send us an email if you have a question. And until next week, this is Chris West.
And Jim Bradley.
For House Calls Vermont. Have a good week, guys.
Have a great week.
House Calls Vermont on WDEV has been brought to you by RK Miles, a third-generation family-owned business proud to be your local buildings material supplier. Find a location near you at rkmiles.com. Holly Construction, for over 30 years, known for anything construction, big or small jobs. One call does it all. HollyConstruction.com. Ken Libby of Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, your trusted advisor, 802-793-2002. Curtis Lumber, with two locations in Vermont, Williston and Burlington. Request a quote for your next project online at curtislumber.com. And by Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. By Shamrock Painting. Painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpainting.com. And by Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems, for all things basementy, northernnefoundations.com. Be sure to join us next Saturday at 12:30 for House Calls Vermont.